Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million.
Well, look, thanks, Tyson Giants. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 12, Dow Futures up 89, NASDAQ Futures up 51 as we're trying to bounce like the Bears.
Hey, that was a dead cat bounce.
That's going to be a pretty flat bounce.
Yeah, that was pretty bizarre. What do you think, guys? Maybe we should start with some
linemen? I've heard of the dead cat bounce, but I've never heard of a dead bear bounce.
Oh, God. Well, they don't...
They'd bounce hard.
Yeah, what...
No, they landed hard and fell hard. They didn't bounce.
Do you think that maybe we've had, I'm going to say, correct me if I'm wrong, with the possible exception of the guy Maddie talked about, I'm going to say we've pissed away seven number one picks on quarterbacks since the last O-lineman that we have, the Bears have drafted in the first round. I could be slightly off, but I think I'm very, very close.
Well, I know
the
first round picks that the Bears have actually drafted at quarterback that I can recall since I think you're talking about since Jimbo Covert.
Well, we had Kyle Orton, we had Rex.
Not a first round pick. Rex was.
Kyle Orton was a trade.
Yeah,
Rex was.
Not Kyle Orton. Who was the little lefty guy?
Cade McNown.
He was a one.
Yeah, from UCLA.
Yeah, Cade McNown was one for sure. Rex was one. Trubisky was one. I think that's the only three first-round quarterbacks.
Well, we gave up one.
We traded first-round picks.
We gave up one for Rick Meyer, right?
I think at least that. Yeah.
No, it was one. And then we gave up two for Cutler. And then this guy's the number one. So what are we up to, six?
Who's this guy?
Trubisky.
We already said him.
Manny already said him.
All right, so we're up to, what's that, six or seven?
We drafted three, and then it sounds like we traded three, so that's six.
Yep, that's a
lot. Six first-round picks for quarterbacks in the last 40 years. It's probably not that much compared to other teams.
That's more like the last 15 years.
Well, you're right. Not if you go back to Jimbo Covert, but also not if you go back to Cade McNown. Cade McNown was in the 90s, I believe.
So 30 years.
All right, my point being is that somewhere you need to get some linemen, and the thing that screwed the Bears up, and they've done this forever. I mean, my parents, my uncles, they're worse than you, Matty, about the Bears. I mean, they were all over these guys. My uncle played football, played against the Bears in the 30s, that kind of thing. So they were just, I mean, when the Bears were on, they were the first guys at the saloon getting it from over, you know, from South Bend, the whole bit. They were just nuts over it. And, they would tell me that Halas would never lose a star, but he always thought the next guy was a bag of balls, and the other people were just, people around him. And they got this defensive thing going, so they pay all these defensive players, and they never pay the offensive players. And I don't see how you get there from here in modern football. And the worst thing that happened to him, who was the guy? I'm going to say 10 years ago, maybe 15. The guard that they picked up, he didn't sign somewhere else. Then the Bears signed him, and he ended up playing at damn near a Pro Bowl level for like 5 years on the cheap. And once that happened, they were absolutely convinced that they could pick up all these old linemen that other people
thought. Are you thinking about that guy from Green Bay? I can't think of his name right now.
He was a guard.
Lineman from Green Bay.
African-American guard. He came here, and he didn't get hurt for like 5 years. He was like, it wasn't all pro, but he was pretty close. And they just said, these guys are, They're like running backs now.
I think you're talking about Reuben Brown.
Yeah.
They got from Buffalo a while. Yeah. You know, this is 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And then he was on the Super Bowl team, the 06 Super Bowl team. And he was a very good lineman for the Bears for like you said, about 5 years.
And once that happened, they were convinced that that's not where you go with your number one picks. You got to pay him too much, and you can just go. You can get the cast off from people that they don't want to pay him anymore. And once they've done
that, that's because the Bears front office always is so astute at picking up talent in late rounds and from other teams' discards.
Right.
I think that was sarcasm.
Yeah, it was.
There's something. I mean, there's something to that strategy as far as you know getting linemen, especially interior linemen, on the cheap. Typically, you draft high or pay up for your tackles, and then you try to fill in with good, solid guards that you can get on the cheap. And I get that, but you got to have some talent, whether you draft it or you acquire it or whatever. And they had a couple of good linemen, I believe, in Daniels and Whitehair, but now Daniels is out for the year, and Whitehair got hurt last night. We'll see how significant that is.
Yeah, how badly hurt is he? I turned the game off in the middle of the fourth quarter, but I saw Whitehair going off, but I didn't see him come back in.
Yeah, he was walking on his own power, which is a good sign, but he was limping bad, and I didn't see the play, but it looked, you know, someone will write us in. But I don't know if it was a knee or an ankle or if it was something like a soft tissue, like a groin or a hamstring or something like that. He was limping, walking very gingerly. I assume for him to come out of the game, then it must be serious, and he's going to be out a few weeks, I would think, at minimum. But
he went over to the tent. He threw his helmet down in disgust, so he knew he was upset about being injured.
But I do think that the only thing that matters in football is your quarterback, and we don't have one. And with the Chiefs and
what do you mean it's all that matters? Our guy was on the ground the whole game.
If you have a good quarterback, you can fill in around him and win Super Bowls, and that's just the way it is. Patrick Mahomes doesn't have a good offensive line. Aaron Rodgers doesn't have a good offensive line. They've never had good offensive lines, and it doesn't matter at all.
Well, I'll take
you can put a bunch of schlubs in
there. There is some truth to that, Matty, but Foles had no protection last night.
Foles,
and there were a couple of plays where he had a couple of chances if he just had even a second more to get his guard. Mooney was open in the flat one time last night.
There's no doubt.
And Foles just overthrew him.
There's no doubt that the Rams have one of the best defensive lines in football, and the Bears have a middling at best offensive line, if not worse than that. And
it's worse than that.
And they had trouble. There's no doubt about that. I get it. But Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, the elite quarterbacks, they go in there with a below average offensive line, and it doesn't matter.
Of course you.
Well, they can also move.
Exactly.
They can also move around a little bit.
They can move. They make
like a statue.
They make plays. They say, "Fine, you're gonna blitz me quick, or my offensive line can't protect. I'm gonna throw quick slants on you all day until you have to back off."
No, Matty.
We don't do anything like that.
Matty's got his story, and he's sticking to it. But if you recall the knife edge here, Matty. 2 weeks ago when the Packers got embarrassed on national TV, one of the reasons why they got embarrassed is their left tackle, who happens to be one of the best in football and has been there for like a decade, went out. And as soon as he did, Rodgers was free game for everybody.
And then last week he was still out, and the Packers had no problem. Rodgers threw two pick sixes and had a bad game. That's why they lost that game.
But then as soon as the tackle went out, they had no chance of coming back.
Well, I mean, you can argue that. This week he was out as well, and they had no problem
going on the road. But they have a little more depth, the Bears. Bears got nobody. The kid from Notre Dame isn't bad, though. The center, of course.
No,
the two best players are...
Oh, Mustafa, yeah.
Yeah.
He came in.
I'm surprised that they didn't put him at center and move Whitehair over to guard when the guy went out. Well, the problem with the pick up the people is you need them. They are available. And it can happen. But the problem is the year that you need somebody isn't necessarily the year that there's a guy available.
That's true. And I have no problem if you spend a first-round pick every year on an offensive lineman. I have no problem with that if you have a quarterback. If you don't have a quarterback, it doesn't matter. You can have the best offensive...
Yeah, then you've got to go for the quarterback first. You've got to find your quarterback
first. Yeah, you can have the best offensive line in the world, and if you don't have a quarterback, it doesn't matter. It means nothing.
Well, there are people who
think... Whereas the opposite, you can have the best quarterback in the world and just have an average offensive line and win the Super Bowl, because we saw it last year. We've seen it a ton of years.
Well, that happened...
Just think about Archie Manning.
Well, it happened with...
Or Jim Plunkett in his early career.
It happened with... The best was when Elway got drafted by the team of Noah Lyons. I'm not playing there. And he didn't. I mean, right now, for the team the Bears have, Trubisky's a better pick because he can at least he can get you a 40-yard run, maybe.
You know,
he can't throw.
I go back and forth on this. Foles can't throw either. So this idea that Foles can throw and Trubisky can't throw, that's crazy. Foles is awful. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback play worse than I've seen in the last few weeks. And yet,
he holds the record for most completions in a row.
They were somehow winning games. And I know he doesn't have the best weapons. I know that, the offensive line isn't the best. I think Montgomery is, I don't think he's any good either, to be honest. But my God, he's just as inaccurate as Trubisky, if not more inaccurate, and he's a statue. Trubisky must have just completely lost all confidence Nagy must have lost all confidence in Trubisky, which I could see that. I think we could all see that. But this idea that Foles has come in and played much better than Trubisky, I don't see any, the stats don't reflect that, and the eye test doesn't reflect that.
Well, they have Montgomery.
Yeah, but he's stuck with him now. He's stuck with Foles right now. He really can't go back to Trubisky unless Foles gets hurt.
Well, the Montgomery thing, he's got the kid who returns punts, who started out as a receiver or something, didn't he? Did they even have another back?
Who, Tariq Cohen?
Well, Tariq Cohen's out
for
the year.
He's
so
got an ACL. Is that the guy you're talking about? Because he started off originally as a defensive back.
No, I'm talking about.
And then
yesterday they were talking about how there was nobody behind Montgomery.
Oh, you're talking about Patterson.
Yeah, Patterson.
Cordero Patterson,
who got stuffed on the 4th-and-1, which was a peculiar play call,
especially since he lost two.
It wasn't, given his size, you would think he wouldn't be stopped on a 4th-and-1.
he was going laterally.
Yeah, I thought that play call was awful.
That was a horrible play.
A lot of the play calling is awful. I mean, it has been. But then there's a couple times where you drive right down the field, and then Foles throws into double coverage for an interception, which ended the game right there. And that's just a horrific throw. At no point was that wide receiver open. At no point. And so that ends the game, basically. Then you drive down again, and you get stopped. So was the play calling that bad? You were able to drive down the field. It's just you have a quarterback that can't make any decisions, and you have skill players that aren't getting open.
But you look
it also seems like there's a lack of communication between Foles and Nagy. Apparently, Brian Griese made a comment last night that Foles has said many times that he knows he can't get a playoff because it takes too long to get in and get the line set.
Well, he also knows that he's getting hammered.
It could be something too, the plays coming in late, because you saw that with Trubisky as well, and you know Nagy's, it's year three now, and I actually have always liked the guy, just as a guy, he seems to get the most out of his players. I mean, his record, he's 12-4 year one, 8-8 year two, so that's 20-12, and then this year he's 5-2, so that's 25-14. That's a pretty damn good record for an NFL coach in your first 2.5 seasons. So you can't argue with the record. That said, when we watch the individual games, man, he does some puzzling stuff with play calling, with clock management, all kinds of different things. I don't know.
Yeah, why didn't he call a timeout last night at the end of the half, the first half?
I didn't see that.
He had one timeout left, and there were like 20 seconds left, but he never called a timeout to get the ball back. He could have at least forced the Rams to punt, and, Patterson could have broken it, or somebody else could have broken the punt back. You never know.
Well, there's no question which team was. But you wonder how much of it, a lot of these teams now, you watch these other teams that have put the running attack back in. The entire counter series has to do, because I remember this from Eric Parsegian, was a big counter guy. You got to get your line flowing one way, and everybody's afraid of the linemen, so they all go flying that way, and then you come back the other way. Nobody's afraid of the barrel, and they can't move. These plays around the end, the reason why they're no good, none of your guards can get out in front of anybody. They don't have a pulling guard, they don't have a guard that can stop a guy coming at him, and they don't have a pulling guard. I mean, they really don't have anybody of any skill in any of those spots. There's nobody out in front of anybody. There's no Jordy Nelson. There's nobody like that anywhere that can get to the second level. And the only thing they have that is a strength on the team is the tight ends.
Jordy Nelson was a funny name to bring up. that's out of football.
No, I'm talking about who's the guy, the guard on Indianapolis, Nelson.
Quentin Nelson.
Yeah, Quentin Nelson.
What's the difference? Jordy Quentin, what's the difference?
It was like the white receiver for the Packers from 5 years ago.
But I mean,
he's a tight end, isn't he?
But wide receiver.
But one, you need an outstanding guy on every. But look at the Bears, the 63 Bears. They were the same way. They had nothing but all pros on the defense. I'm probably the only person in the city who remembers who the offensive line was. The only guy.
Well, it's not me.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, they had some guys there that were okay, but they didn't have. They had Ditka, tight end. Obviously, he's a Hall of Famer, but they just have never. I don't know. The only guy who drafted offensive lineman was Jim Finks, and who was the guy that they couldn't wait to fire because he was a buddy with Ditka's. Is it Jerry Venezia? What the hell is his name? Who was the general manager that they fired because he and Ditka were trying to take over the team or something?
You know what I'm talking about. It might have been Venezia. I don't remember.
Yeah, he and Ditka were buddies, and they fired him just to let Ditka know that he wasn't really in charge. And Ditka only lasted like another year or two because then he started to hate the Ballises again. Anyway. So, Brennan, we have yesterday the market was down heavy. We've got a bunch of people going crazy on the COVID cases versus the one incredible side that seems to think...
It was Bill Tobin after Jerry Venezia.
You know, but I'm saying Venezia was the guy that was fired.
Was it Venezia that you were talking about?
Yeah, he
was there from 83 to 86.
Yeah, and they canned him because he and Ditka were too cozy.
But Finks built the team for the most part.
Yeah.
From 74 to 82.
Yep.
And Venezia added big pieces from 83 to 86. I mean, they were both important.
Yeah, yeah. Venezia... Well, who did Finks was Peyton. He was I don't think he was Colbert. I think that might have been Venezia. I think Venezia was Colbert and Thayer. Not sure on that. But I know Finks was Van Horn, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Finks, but I think Venezia was Singletary, wasn't he? Not sure on that.
Venezia came in 83. And he took Colbert with his first pick in 83. Then he took Willie Gault, which was a contributor, Dave Duerson, Tom Thayer, Richard Dent. I mean, that's a hell of a draft in 83.
Yeah.
And then 84, Wilbur Marshall, Ron Rivera. So that's a couple of contributors there. And then 85, he took the Fridge, number one. And then he took Kevin Butler in the fourth round, the kicker. And then 86... Neil Anderson, who ended up being a very good player a few years later, after Peyton retired. I mean, that was the running back I grew up watching was Neil Anderson, number 35, who was a really good player. Not a big contributor, you know, obviously, right away. And then kind of a bunch of no-names after that. And then he was kind of run out of there after 86.
Yeah,
So those he definitely drafted some guys that contributed. But then Finks, you know, he took McMahon number one in 82. That was his last number. And then Dennis Gentry was a contributor, you know, special teams guy. And the year before that, took Keith Van Horn number one, Singletary number two. Those are two obviously really good picks. And then a year before that, he took Otis Wilson number one, who was a really good player. So both those guys.
Well, Wilbur Marshall was a tremendous pick, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Who picked Peyton?
So...
Walter, that was in 75.
Walter was drafted number one in 1975, and so that would have been Finks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Finks' second draft.
Out of, he wasn't Grambling. Where the hell was he?
Jackson State.
Jackson
Mississippi,
State.
Jackson State.
Yep, Jackson State.
That was a reach. Nobody knew who the hell he was.
Yeah. That was back when it was 17 rounds in the draft.
Yeah.
And not a single player besides Walter Payton it was any good in the rest of that draft that the Bears took. I mean, for the most part, anyway.
Well, yeah, you have to grade them. Did they go somewhere else? For a long period of time, the best drafts by far in that division were the Packers. I mean, I don't know if I can find it again on the internet. I can never find anything, but they went through every. The Bears had and they're still reeling from this to a certain extent. The years that they got, who was the guy? The guy from Denver they gave all the picks for.
Cutler.
There were a couple of drafts there where the Bears only had three picks. And if you look at them versus the Packers, there was one I looked at and it had divisional, I think it was divisional. And they graded, they would tell you what people are. They'd say, okay, Matty Weber, 2 years on the Bears, 3 years somewhere else, or something like that. Or still in football, not on the Bears. Still on the Bears. And the Bears won a period of the Packers. I mean, when a couple of years, even when they're only, what, they're seven rounds, Manny? Had like 12 picks. And like 11 of the guys were still in football. Like seven of them on the Packers. Where the Bears would have, you know, three picks that year, and all three of them are out of football. And you sit there and go, that's a difference of like 10 people.
Oh, yeah. No, and still, when you throw in, like, the Khalil Mack trade, they're still dealing with that shit.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
They have, you know, no game-changing picks at the top because they trade them. And I like Khalil Mack, and we all realize he's a great player, and you could argue both sides of that trade and you know, and probably be right. But it sucks not having premium picks when the draft comes around. And the Bears never...
But it was that. Also interesting last night that Leonard Floyd had a couple of good plays last night. You think he had a little incentive against the Bears?
I think you're right, yeah.
Well, I mean,
the Bears gave up on him. He had a sack early in the game.
But you need to get people... I mean, it's obviously easy to say, but the Packers had people that were all going to play someplace. And most of them hung with the Packers. But the idea that you draft six people and 2 years later, five of them are out of football. You didn't even get a chance to trade those guys.
Well, the other thing about that is that can the coaching staff develop the players? Now, if somebody plays for 2 or 3 years and looks like they're a bust and you trade them or you let them go to free agency, that's one thing. And if somebody else picks them up and develops their talent, that's just a failure on, in this case, the Bears coaching staff.
Well, it is, but... I think you also have to be in a situation where you draft people that, A, are good, but also if you have five receivers, you don't go draft another receiver.
Well, look what the Bears did with Greg Olsen. He got crosswise with management and they traded him.
Well, what's his name didn't do tight ends? Martz.
Mm-hmm.
Which that is just absurd. A Hall of Fame guy that you have that wants to play here forever, that he should have been a Bear for 15 years.
And, absolutely.
I mean, they couldn't wait to get rid of him. Because of Martz, a guy that you know is only going to be there for 2 years, I mean, for God's sake, that was horrific. We knew it at the time, too.
Yeah,
we knew Bears fans knew it at the time that was a terrible decision.
Yep.
Well what are they going to do with all the good teams in one division? Has that ever happened before? To this extent?
You talking about the NFC West?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it has, but, yeah, you have four teams that I wouldn't be surprised if any four of them, you know, went to the Super Bowl. That's how good that division is. Now, I do still think Seattle's the cream of the crop, but Arizona is 5-2, and they're really good, and Kyler Murray ain't going anywhere. That kid's unbelievable. The quarterback has completely changed that whole culture, and they have nothing else around him, and it doesn't matter, although they traded for Hopkins, so
they got some real speed on the edges.
They have Buda Baker, the safety, who's a pro, you know, an all-pro guy. And yeah, they have a decent defensive line. Chandler Jones is good, but their defense isn't very good overall. Their offense, they don't have much outside of Hopkins. They have no running game. Their offensive line is okay at best, and they have no receivers except for Hopkins. No tight end, but Murray just is unbelievable. I mean, he's like a video game guy back there. They can't touch him. On 3rd and 6, he runs and picks up the first down every time. I mean, and then you have the 49ers who won the Super Bowl last year who just killed the Patriots on Sunday. And then the Rams who we saw last night who can beat anybody when the defense is playing well. So that division's tough.
Yeah, what do you think is going to come out of that one?
I still think Seattle.
Well, these guys got to play Seattle twice and San Francisco twice.
Right, they've already played San Francisco once, and they lost. Right.
Well, they got to play the Cardinals twice, I mean.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a... All right, so, Brendan, we've got we got 2 minutes. We also got the election coming up. We have this, somehow or another, how this is coming down along virus lines. I never thought I'd see something like this in my lifetime, but we have issues in a lot of states. We have people on the one side clamoring that this is a third wave. Brandon, when it reaches a town for the first time, how is that a third wave? Isn't it just spreading around the country?
Well, I think when you're looking at it from the definition of a third wave, if there was a surge early in the spring, there was another surge in the summer, and there was another surge that we're in right now. And in between, there are some valleys. So on a national basis, this is a third wave. However, you are correct that when it gets into the small towns for the first time, yes. You know, I would think that when you're looking at like New England area or Illinois, you're talking about a second or even a third wave. But when you're talking about places like North Dakota, South Dakota, this is the primary surge in those areas around the country. It's not the third wave there, but overall nationally, it's the third wave.
I just think the thing has been spreading since day one. It was never containable, and why do people think I'm wrong on this? If this idea that somehow, if you just would have worn the sweater like your mother said and had the chicken soup, you wouldn't have got the cold. Come on,
no, that's not it. What they were saying was mitigation steps could have prevented the widespread disease in the occurrences the way that it did. It wasn't going to stop it from spreading, but it would have contained it a little bit better and allowed for more research on therapeutics and how to treat the disease.
And nobody will ever know if that's true.
That's right. Nobody will ever know.
And I don't see how. I mean, from everything I've read from day one, the thing is at least as contagious as the common cold. And how did Jay?
It's probably more contagious than that.
I was going to say,
and it's also deadlier.
My guess is it's 2 to 3 times as contagious. So what makes Lori and Jay and Tony, if you just would listen to me, we can handle this. Do they think they're better than the common cold too?
I think that their theory is that they're looking at this until they had more scientific evidence. They were trying to do things to mitigate. And there's going to be a loss to the economy in any event, and they're trying to mitigate that damage by some of the proposals they put in place.
When you do really ignorant stuff like close places and send people home, the thing travels from person to person at home, Brennan. I mean, it's not like... You see the guy real quick, the guy who was on with Margaret Brennan, and she was giving him the histrionic... Well, why don't you demand people wear a face mask? Why don't you tell people what to do? This whole 50s mom thing going here is really starting to get to me. The guy says, well, you know, Margaret, the reason why I don't is because I wore a mask every day, right, just like I was supposed to, and I still got it. So I don't think it works, he said to her.
He was also around people at the White House who weren't wearing masks and weren't following the protocol.
But he was wearing his.
But the mask is not... You're buying into an argument that I don't buy into right now, Chief.
Well, I mean, you bought into this mask thing.
The worst steps that could have been done to mitigate and reduce the spread of this were not done. And part of that was because people don't believe that it is contagious or that it's deadly.
It's incredibly contagious.
What?
It's incredibly contagious.
Well, I think there are a lot of people who don't believe that. I think there are a lot of people who... For example, go to rallies and go to events for the Supreme Court justice who don't think that it's contagious at all by their actions.
Well, a lot of people feel that in their age group, it's not deadly. And they're not worried about it. And guess
what? And I think that's a problem. That contributes to the spread.
Well, okay, but why? I mean, they're not wrong.
They're not wrong about it being contagious.
They're not wrong about if they get it, they're going to be okay.
Well, yeah, but they also spread it to other people.
Okay,
around
but I'm saying
them,
everything.
May not be okay.
But everything these people have done, we've never in our lifetime have you had the guilt trip that when you came in the OEX pit and had the flu and somebody maybe next to you gave it to you and you went to work the next day that and somehow or another somebody gave it to another guy that went home and somehow or another was stupid enough to go to a or unaware enough to go to a nursing home and somebody else, I mean, and they want to hang that on you. You start doing that, Brendan, all of a sudden we have a whole different world. I mean, there's people that are going to catch a cold that are on chemo that are going to die. That doesn't mean the person on the bus who had the cold somehow is responsible for that when it's 5 people away. I mean, we start going down that road. I guess it'll be good for attorneys, but I don't know how you come back from that slope.
Well, I think the way to come back from the slope is not to go down that slope in the first place, to try to put mitigation in place. But we're well past that point now. Throughout the country, we're well past that point, and that's an argument that neither side can really win because we don't have enough evidence that we can point to definitively to say this works or doesn't work because it's been a mixed message to this point. We will never be able to find out.
Well, but, yeah, I mean, it's. I just wish it had not gotten so political because it's obviously causing all kinds of issues. Brendan, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures up 15 now, NASDAQ Futures up 53. We're trying to come back from yesterday. Need a lot more than 15, though. Be right back, Mr. Joel Uncannon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Sharks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks Jackson. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures up 15. And the futures up 54. Again, we're bouncing pretty strong here, but still it's a top 104 yesterday. Well, the DAX is down 2 points. There's no bounce there in the DAX. I'm surprised about that. They were down almost 3% yesterday. FTSE up 10.2%. CAC around down 30.6. So there's like a new bounce over there. HSBC, however, is up 6.9%. That was a big earnings play to watch over there. Over in Asia, you got the Nikkei down 8. Call that flat. Shanghai up 3. Call that flat. Hang Seng down 131.5. So the Asian markets are just not playing in this for some reason. Now yesterday, I'll give you a review of yesterday. Dow was down 650 after being down, I had it down 870 at one point. I might have touched 900. S&P futures down 64. That's 1.89%, 1.86%. NASDAQ was down 189. They both were down lower at some point. Bonds, 0.79. A 10-year, the Bund, minus 0.58. And Japan's still a positive 0.03. Oil, up 39 cents, 38.95. But they were 41-ish a week ago today. So we're down a reasonable amount in oil. Brent up 38 cents, 40.84. Natural gas, 303. Arbob, 112. And we have gold down at 189 and 1903. Silver up a penny to 24.43. Copper up a penny to 310. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're very quiet, Chief, on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Absolutely no delays to speak of, so enjoy a nice, quiet Tuesday morning commute. Weather today, another cold day, a partly cloudy skies. Could see some sunshine, though. That'll be nice. We haven't seen that in a few days. A high of just 43. Right now it's overcast and 34, going up to a partly cloudy 43. For our Phoenix listeners, it's cool down in the Valley of the Sun as well. Partly cloudy skies and a high of just 69. Right now it's clear and 51. In sports, it was a battle of good teams, at least record-wise, in the NFC last night. The Bears at 5-1 went into Los Angeles against the 4-2 Rams. And it was a defensive game in the first half, 10-3 at the break. But then the Rams exploded for 14 points in the third quarter to blow the game open. Bears got a late defensive touchdown from Eddie Jackson, but lost 24-10. Couldn't get anything going on offense. Nick Foles was just dreadful again. 28-40, 261 yards, 0 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, a QB rating of just 66. Meanwhile, the Bears can't run the ball either. David Montgomery, 14 for 48 yards, 3.4 yard average. Cordell Patterson, 3 carries for just 1 yard, including getting stuffed on a big 4th-and-1. Allen Robinson did catch a long 40-yard pass, but overall he was just 4 catches for 70 yards, and no one else did anything of note on the offensive side. Defense played pretty well. As I mentioned, Eddie Jackson picked up a fumble and scored a touchdown. He also had 8 tackles, and he was probably the MVP of the game. But Bears lose. They're now 5-2. After dropping 24-10 to the Rams, the Bears will play the Saints next week as the schedule doesn't get any easier. Major League Baseball tonight, game six of the World Series. The Dodgers could win it tonight. They lead 3-2 against Tampa. It'll be Snell versus Gonsolin. That's a 7:08 Chicago time first pitch. Chief.
The Bears, well, let's forget about the Bears. Let's talk to Joel. The Bears are bad. Joel, how are you? How about Michigan? You guys won?
Yeah, we had just what happened to Tariq Cohen? Did you guys have him?
He tore his ACL a few weeks ago. He's out for the year.
Somebody fell on him after he caught a punt.
Yeah, we could talk some Michigan football. Do you know where that Michigan football comes from? You should know.
Michigan? Oh, probably Bo.
Close. You ever heard of Bob Uecker?
Yeah.
Yeah. The single greatest announcer in the history of sports. He got that from Fielding H. Yost. Now, I'm going back a ways now. Do you know who Fielding H. Yost was?
I've heard the name, but...
Godfather of Michigan football. He coached us back in the late 1800s and early 1900s. He actually came up with the design for Michigan Stadium in the early 1900s, and he built it with the idea that they could put 120,000 people in there. And that's when you still had people going to games, you know, in with buggies, with horses. But he was from West Virginia, and he had a twang. And so he used to say Michigan instead of Michigan. I hope no one listened to me on taking Minnesota. I had full disclosure, no wager on the game. Joe Milton looks good. We may have a quarterback. I mean, he has all the physical attributes. He's 6'4", 240. Supposedly could throw the ball 80 yards, flat-footed. They replaced, you know, they restocked the offensive line with four guys going to the NFL. They had four different guys run the ball. They threw to nine different receivers, and the defense looked pretty good. So do I think we can beat Ohio State? No. But do I think that maybe we can go 7-1 or 6-2? Yes. So a pleasantly surprised, Chief, after a long hiatus of Michigan sports.
When does the Pac-12 start this week or next week?
I think next week, because they're playing a 6-game schedule and then a 7th game, where the Big Ten's playing an 8-game schedule and then a 9th game, and so I think they're starting 2 weeks after.
No, they're not going to have anybody. What about, is Big Ten nobody in the stadium?
Friends and family of the players, or just our family of the players, that's it.
Where's Brendan when I want to give him crap? How can you fill up an airplane and you can't have 10,000 people in a stadium?
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, obviously, our governor has had a little tighter restrictions than some of the other states. But, you know, to be honest with you, Chief, if they told me that I could go sit in my seats this year and they offered it on a limited basis, I think I'll pass. I think I'll pass this year. I'll let other people go, but... We've discussed the pandemic and things at length on this show, and next year, yeah, maybe. I'll take a look at it. But right now, with the way things are, my couch is not bad. And that's a hard thing for me to say. I've been going to games since I was 6 years old in 1969 and had the same seats in Michigan Stadium, section 42, row 46, since 1975. So it's tough for me to say that, but you know what? My health is more important to me.
So they never moved you up?
Well, this is what happened. We were in row 51, and they put in handicapped seating. So they had to take out five rows. So they moved us down to 46. And there's a seat license fee, right, for every section.
Really?
And our seat license fee is, I don't know, per seat, whatever it is. But if you go across the aisle to section 43, it almost doubles, right? So I look at that from a price perspective. Second of all, literally people that have known me since I've been 9, 10 years old, and I'm 57 now, sit in that section with us. So it's kind of hard to leave. Also, if we ever go to a game and you see the way I enter the stadium, what facilities I use, I can actually, this is probably too much information, but at a timeout, even with a crowd, 110,000, I can scoot out of my seat, get up, grab a hot dog, or go to the bathroom and not miss a play at 110,000. So it's time for me to move my seats, Chief. That's a long answer to a short
question. Why don't you say you have your routine and you're sticking to it?
Yeah, that would be it. Those are the days.
All right, so whoa, see, when you say those seat licenses, a seat license by my definition is you buy the seat and then you can go ahead and sell the seat and there's no fee per year. You're talking about you got to pay them every year.
That is correct.
And yeah, there's nothing for you to sell. If you decide you don't want to go, you're just out.
Correct. They were originally my dad's seats, and then Michigan did it. I think they're allowing it now, but you could transfer to someone in the family for $500. And when my dad was still alive, now, if my dad would have passed away, they would have went to my mom. Then when my mom passed away, they would have been gone. But since, you know, so I had to be really nice to my mom for a long time. But we were able to transfer them to my kids. And so Data and Emily are the seat holders. I write the check to Michigan, but they're the seat holders.
Isn't it spectacular? We got to get the market coming out of you that they won't just charge you $150 for the ticket because they're too embarrassed for a game.
Exactly.
For a game when they're not paying the players. But they'll charge you $75, but they'll charge you $75 a game for the seat license, and that's okay.
It's the only. I'll say it was my only. You know, like I don't buy Pistons, and I don't buy. Obviously, I don't go Lions games, and you know, I just this is what I've had. This has been a tradition. It was something that you know started with me and you know my dad and my sister a long time ago. I think you guys saw that article I wrote about Ann Arbor. There's a picture with me and my daughter. When I took her to her first game, she was 4. So, you know, there's a lot more to wins and the losses. But anyways, we did talk markets. I think the trading range is in for the week. I think we're going to chop around, drive everybody crazy, and then see what happens with the election. That's my market comment.
All right, so you don't think we're going to just sink if there's – I don't think there's going to be any deal. You don't think we're going to
sink?
No
deal. Right. No deal. You knew there's going to be no deal. Yeah. Why would a Democrat – give him a deal before the election. I'm not going to make any political comments, but I knew that there was going to be no deal. Why would the Democrats do a deal? I mean, the Democrats are up for re-election. Yeah, let's do a deal. Let's do a deal. But overall, Pelosi, they're not going to do a deal before the election. I might be wrong, but I hear the Senate laughs, so not much chance of that happening.
Is your buddy Tommy Tuberville going to win in Alabama?
Is Tommy Tuberville running?
Yeah.
Former Auburn coach. Where else did he coach? Mississippi?
Yeah, I think he's probably an in. Those guys love their coaches, even if they don't know anything.
That's not a job I would want to have. So, what's he running as? Republican or Democrat?
Oh, he's Republican. He's running.
Really?
Yeah. All right, but
even the Democrats down there are Republicans.
Well, that's the truth. Yeah, they're still Alabamans, so. Anyway, not saying anything wrong with Alabamans, just saying.
They lost their wide receiver. I'm sorry to hear that. What's the guy, Waddle or whatever? Supposed to be a first-round draft choice, but long ways away from playing them. So let's just hope the election goes well. That I can't say I don't care who wins, but I do care that our country handles this in a mature way. And whoever loses, loses. Whoever wins, wins. And we could just start a new chapter in the history of our country.
I'm just kind of hoping whoever wins the presidency, the other side wins the Senate.
I agree with that. I agree. And I think that's going to happen. I really do. But we'll see. I'll be on next Tuesday.
Yep.
So it's going to be wild.
All right, bud.
Vote early and vote often.
He's from Chicago. SP Futures up 15. NASDAQ Futures up 58. Be right back, Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Can't buy me love.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Matt Warren on the board. S&P futures up 1575. We have Mr. Kenny Pulcheri. And I have evidence in front of me that maybe has been fabricated that Mr. Pulcheri is using the expanding name trick for the election.
Which is?
In Boston, we have a K Pulcheri voting. Connecticut, we have a Ken Pulcheri. New York, we have a Kenny. And in Florida, we have a Kenneth.
There you go.
I'm thinking it's the same guy.
Wait. Are you kidding me? There are that many Ken Pulcheris? I thought it was the only one in the whole country.
Well, that's the point.
It's a very common name.
That's the point. You are the only one. You just get around. Let's put it that way. It's amazing what these mail-in ballots can do for you.
I just went on Sunday and cast my ballot early voting in Palm Beach.
See, that was the fourth one.
You know, it was a very interesting process because I stood in line for an hour. That was fine. It moved right along. It was very controlled. There were no poll watchers intimidating anybody. It was just people standing in line having a nice conversation. Both sides were there. There were plenty of Biden signs and plenty of Trump signs, and it was what it was. But what I find interesting is when I got up to the table, I had to give the woman my license, so she scanned it. She verified who I was, and it pulled up and it printed out a receipt, much like you might get at Walmart or Home Depot when you check out one of those white wide receipts. And on it, it had my name, my address, my date of birth, and my party affiliation. Now, whether or not I voted for that person is not the point. The fact is, it comes up, it's printed right out there on the paper what my party affiliation is. So she gives it to me, and she says, sign this, please. And so I signed it. She verified my signature. She took it back, and she put it in a box. And I said, okay, so now that you know what my party affiliation is, you can assume maybe which way I'm voting. So which way is it floating in Florida since there are 6 million votes already? She goes, well, what do you mean? I go, well, look, you printed out my party affiliation, so now it's out there. Everyone knows what my party affiliation is. Whether or not that's the way I voted, that's not the point. So I said, so you got to tell me how many people have showed up with that party affiliation, because in this way it'll indicate which way the polls are going. Oh, she goes, we don't know that information. I go, really? Honestly?
God. I'm going to say that your party affiliation, by definition, and please disagree if I'm wrong, is the ballot you took in the last primary.
No, well, that might have been, but don't forget, I just moved to Florida, so I had to re-register. So when I re-registered, I had to put in a party affiliation, right? And after I did it, I thought to myself, you know, I should have just put independent, because it's nobody's business which side of the fence I might or might not be on. But when it came up, you know, I had put a party affiliation, so therefore when it came up, and so it's out there, right? So she just takes this receipt after I've signed it, and she just throws it in her box with a bunch of other party affiliation receipts that are in the box. So I said to her, you have to know which way then it's, I mean, if everybody in here is voting Republican, then you got to think that the vote is swinging Republican. If everyone's voting Democrat, right? I mean, if everyone shows up as a Democrat, you'd think that the vote would swing Democrat. So which way is it swinging? She goes, oh, we don't know that. I go, really?
Well, two things that, everything you say is interesting, but two things here. You don't have to show an ID here.
Where, Chicago?
No. I don't think it's required that you have an ID to vote.
It's a state by state thing. Yeah.
Well, it's a state by state because they wouldn't. If I didn't have my ID, I couldn't vote. I could not vote if I didn't have my Florida, and it had to be a Florida. It couldn't be my passport. It had to be a Florida ID, whether it was state issued ID or a state issued driver's license.
Here it's you got the judges. That's why in Illinois when we decided to go, all this mail in stuff, I was a little concerned because we're the only discipline here in the system is the judges checking your signature that I know of. But see, in Kenny, the party, I don't think we have to, when we register, I don't, it's been so long. I always thought that your party affiliation was, here it is anyway, is the ballot you took in the last primary, which is really screwed up here because there's really, in Chicago, there's like no Republican primary. So even the Republicans will grab the Democratic primary ballot because that's where the action is. So, yeah. Go ahead. So I'm here, those numbers are skewed.
Yeah. Well, that's funny, because when I registered down here, and that might be true in New York, I'm trying to remember, because once I registered in New York a long time ago, I lived there for 40 years, but when I registered down here, back in January, whenever it was I registered, I had to select. Now, I could have selected independent, which at the time, I didn't. I just selected the party that I'm typically associated with. But it was interesting when that receipt came out. I thought to myself, wow, that's interesting. I said, because they print it out, they make you sign it, everybody sees it. I mean, everybody, all the poll workers can see, this guy's a Republican, this guy's a Democrat. Oh, my God, there's, so many more Republicans voting or so many more Democrats voting. We can surmise at least which way that part of the county, that part of the state might be leaning.
Well, I think right? It's check this one out, both you gentlemen. I think it's also done to discipline, for lack of a better term, voters in the primaries. I don't think if you're a registered Republican that they'll give you a Democratic primary bill, because some states were very upset. And this is going back a long time; it's a fuzzy memory. Some states around us, I'm thinking maybe Iowa might have won. Maybe they didn't want there was a couple of races where somebody was encouraging Republicans to take a Democratic ballot and essentially not vote for the guy they think could actually beat the Republican, or the other way around. So
right.
So they said you cannot. If you're a registered Democrat or Republican, you can't take the other ballot in the primary. And I wonder if that's why you're doing it. Because when I walk in a primary, they just said Democrat or Republican, and they just hand it to you. So whether they keep a record of that, I don't know. But there's nothing that says, oh no, you can't go as a Republican because you're a registered Democrat. But I think some states you can't.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know. I never thought about it like that.
Believe me, there's all kinds of ways people have been screwing out these elections. If you go back, I could recall the arguments on all this stuff all over the place. Hey, what about the market? Yesterday seemed like one of the first times we're going to, the market looked like it was connecting with the real world. Now we're bouncing back a little bit today, but
I think it was, and I even said in a tweet yesterday, if anybody's surprised at what happened yesterday, it was going to happen at some point or another. If anyone's surprised that the market sold off like it did, they've been living under a rock all this time, because we've been talking about this, right? There's been this no alternative opportunity. Where are people going to go? Where are people going to invest their money? Rates are zero, right? There's no place else to go, and everything gets overvalued and stretched out. Meanwhile, every issue that they talked about yesterday is still out there, has been out there, continues to be out there. So I wasn't surprised at all. Actually, I'm surprised that it wasn't worse than it was. I fully expect that there's going to be continued volatility in still in the weeks ahead, going into and right after the election, depending on how this plays out.
Well, I look at the market and it's having when everybody's looking at the FANGs, of course, any customer, you have the you know, yeah. They look at how those stocks are doing, and that's what our portfolio is supposed to be doing, some people anyway. But I look at some of the ones, in the midst of this whole mess, Kenny, and I'm not talking about every stock, like in 2000, which really wasn't every stock in 2000, but there's an undercurrent of a lot of these stocks that are part of the lockdowns or whatever. They are every bit as maybe even pricier than some of this crap in 2000. I mean, we're talking
agreed.
We're talking 30 times revenue. I mean, I remember, I mean, giving a lecture in your beloved town of Brooklyn, where everybody in there had bought Cisco above 50, and the thing was trading 6. You know, we're talking right. Cisco. I mean, you look at some of these stocks, and I again, do not take any advice from me, but some of this stuff, you know, Zoom and Snap and some of these things, and I'm only touching the tip of the iceberg. You don't follow more stocks than me, or some of them are 80 times revenue. I mean, they could be one-tenth of where they are now.
Agreed. And that's why I think, you know, when you see days like yesterday, I'm not surprised at all that it happened. And like I said, I'm actually not surprised that there wasn't more of a swift correction, that once it starts to gain that momentum, that, you know, we've seen it before. It just falls out of bed. The buyers step away. The sellers get panicky. The algo's getting overdrive. And next thing you know, the market's down 2,000 points. I mean, yesterday we were down 1,000 points at, 1 o'clock at one point. And it actually felt to me like, okay, maybe this is going to be the crack. Maybe now today's going to be that day where it continues to fall. But then again, Nancy came out. There was a headline about Nancy still hopeful of a stimulus package, and boom, right away they started buying the market again.
How many spoons
did her hubby? I think that's baloney too.
How many spoons did her hubby buy before that announcement?
Yeah. I don't know, but you and I keep talking about that because that would be a fascinating study. Not only her and her hubby, but what about everybody else? Don't even get me started about that.
Quick question, serious question. If they weren't trading it, and didn't even realize that the stuff they were saying was tradable, if they were that stupid, is that worse than them being that crooked?
Yeah, I think it is worse than them being crooked, because if they're going to claim that they don't think or they don't realize that their terminology, their words, their headlines impact the market, especially now when things are so kind of anxiety ridden, I think that speaks volumes about who they are.
By the way, is Nancy out this time? I thought she was only going to do one more term, but that was the deal.
Oh, no. No, she's not out yet. She's not out yet. She, in fact, is going to run for another House again if the Democrats win, right?
But I thought the reason why they let her in last time is she said only 2 more years. Or did everybody forget that?
Wait, say it again. I missed it.
I thought she said that she's only going to be a speaker again if... Or people only let her be speaker again if she said only 2 more years.
Well, she said, and there was a headline yesterday that I saw, that she has every intention of running if the Democrats, you know, if the Democrats maintain control, which maintain control.
Oh, God.
Now, whether or not she's successful, I would like to think that the country and her party is getting a little bit tired of her, not for anything. Listen, she might be a nice person and all that stuff, but I would not be surprised if there's a little bit of a pushback on her. There's going to want to be a change of leadership, I would imagine. Certainly, I mean, there'll be a push from the far left. I'm not sure they'll succeed, but I think at some point they have to be a little bit tired of her.
The world's crookedest state, we'll let you go here, Kenny. Illinois has actually managed to send people to Washington in my lifetime that did a nice job and came back without being millionaires, and like wouldn't teach to the common guys like Adlai Stevenson and Paul Simon and those kinds of guys. These people have totally enriched their family while they're there. I have no use for them. I don't care which party they're in.
Right.
Anyway, on that happy note, Kenny, we'll talk to you next week, buddy. SP Futures up 16.
Yeah, have a good week.
SP Futures up 68. As Kenny Pulcheri says, vote early, vote often. We'll be right back, Mr. Jeff Joseph.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Just Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures now up 15.50. NASDAQ futures up 68. Again, we're not near a Fibonacci, which would be two-thirds retracement here. The NASDAQ was down 190 yesterday. We have the modern Fibonacci, Mr. Jeff Joseph, with us.
Jesus. Nice leap.
Oh, he needs a...
Good morning, Chief.
All he needs is a beard. He can't even look like him. Doesn't he have longer hair? Just saying. Jeff, how are you?
I am okay. How are you?
How would you like it to have 800 years from now, people talking about the Jeff Joseph reversal?
Really? Really? Which one would that be?
Well, his was two-thirds. Everything, you know, you went down to 300, you come back 200, and that's when you sell it again type of thing.
Uh-huh. Okay.
He was a big two-thirds guy. I'm not sure where that all came from, but it was a big number. It was kind of a sacred spot there. I don't know where. He found it in nature. Mm-hmm. He found it everywhere. You ever talk to a guy who was a big Fibonacci guy? It's always an interesting conversation.
The offshoots, too. You know, good big bell curve guy, Six Sigma guy,
What's a Six Sigma guy?
Have Fibonacci roots.
All
right, that's my choice. I believe in math.
Yeah,
I used to believe in science until it was became co-opted for political purposes. Now it's part of any bingo game I play. Anytime someone says believe in science,
well, Jeff is as a guy who runs the magazine and has been in management. I think unlike some of the people who run around and quote scientists or stuff, you realize that as the leader, the president of Luckbox, president of the U.S. What's the difference? I mean, you're going to have people at the table.
I had a nickel for every time I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, you're going to go around the table, and the best quote was, I don't know if you were a Star Trek the Next Generation guy, but they gave little Wesley, the young kid, they said, what would Captain Picard do? And he said he would listen carefully to everybody's opinion, and then he'd make the call, and everybody would go with him. That's what a leader does, right? And you're going to go around the table, you're going to listen to the scientists, you're going to listen to maybe two or three, you're going to listen to the attorney who goes, oh God, we're going to be sued. And at the end of the day, you say what everybody, you think about what everybody said, and you make the call. It's not like you only listen to the attorney, and the minute he says we can be sued, you tell everybody else to leave, and that's a decision, right? I mean, there's times when you go against, there's all kinds of people. That's why you have all of them in the room, right?
That's correct.
And everybody thinks, oh God, you just got to listen to Fauci. You got to listen to this guy. I probably have read so many scientific articles that are totally conflicting or somewhat conflicting. I've read stuff about, God, if only everybody wore a mask. And then the next one comes across my desk, how unhealthy it is for healthy people to wear masks. And yesterday I get one. This is out of the blue. The N95 the real high end
N95.
The real high end masks that if you actually get COVID on that mask for whatever it's made out of, it can stay active for 10 days. Or if you got a crummy cotton mask, it dies in a day. I'm like, when you read all this stuff, how in God's name can you come up with a conclusion on anything? I mean, I'm just saying. I mean,
it's true. It's true. It's a shame. You know, we saw the early co-opt of science on you know virtue signaling line songs, but lawn signs. Excuse me, but that was always harmless enough. But now when it's used in political speeches, it's just so disingenuous. And I agree with the premise. Of course, we believe in science. But as you said, you know, it's a factor that contributes to a broader decision-making process, A. And then secondly, when the science is not clear, you know, then you have to give it its appropriate weight. But now it's just become some knee-jerk dogma that's just the words that are thrown out with no meaning anymore.
Now, did you, I never asked, and if you don't want to say, don't say, but your daughter, as you mentioned on the show, was tested positive down in Illinois.
Sure.
She never got. I think she never got real sick. Did anybody else ever get it?
No, not for a minute. Although she was quarantined in our home, so with the other our entire family. So she lived with the three of us for 3 weeks and tested positive twice on that occasion. And during that period, we all tested negative twice, despite ultra high proximity during the period of time when she was no doubt infected, and I had even shared a couple beverages with her, you know, a couple glasses of wine, a couple drinks from the same bottle on the day that she was tested positively.
So you guys had the
before,
you had the half pint.
So she was, you know, just apparently not shedding, you know. Have a low viral load and not shedding much, and obviously that varies among different people. That can't be an indication of anything that to anybody else. But in her instance, she was fortunate not to be shedding any material viral load.
There was
contagious.
I don't know if I sent it to you or not, but there's somebody dropped this out of all the studies I get. There was a study out of Hong Kong, and some of these innovative studies, they're all from overseas, Jeff, which is making me very suspicious.
Yeah.
Do we have like a
first serious, of all, what are we doing?
Yeah. Do we have a serious censorship thing going here? But somehow or another, these guys or ladies, these people, or I say guys, I guess including women, they somehow determined they have a very big what do they call them, a tracker thing going on over there, and they claim that 65.5, not just 65.4 or 0.6, but 65.5% of the people who've had COVID or have it, have not given it to any other person. So that would put your daughter in that class. And they claim that virtually everybody who's gotten it has gotten it from 19% of the people that have had it, these so-called super spreaders. What do you suppose is causing that? That boggles my mind. I can't figure that out. If I had the chicken pox or you had the chicken pox, we both gave it to the guy next to us. I mean, this is
sure.
Different.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to claim to know what I can't speak to, but I can make an educated guess based on the same data that everyone else is looking at. And this is not a young person's disease. You know, I mean, so the latest findings from what I'm following most closely, it's a study that originated out of Duke University that goes across, now they're up to 63,000 college, this is only on college kids, 63,000 college kids at 47 different universities have tested positively. 63,000. Two hospitalizations, zero deaths. And the number's up to 63,000.
I must have got the one after that because I got the one that says 68,000, three hospitalizations, no deaths. I must have got the next week's edition.
Okay. All right. So we're in the ballpark. And those are amazing numbers. I mean, it tells you a lot. It tells you that this is a disease. As we learned early, we learned this in New York, you know, early. This is a disease that afflicts those who are older with comorbidities, things we've known forever. So, you know, I understand the absolute anger of this little message. I have a 17-year-old boy who works a restaurant job for cash while he's in high school. And that's in Evanston, Illinois. And he works at a place owned by an entrepreneur who has three local restaurants. One of them that's a seasonal one, so it's shut down when the weather turns, and that leaves him two indoor restaurants. And he was doing a little bit of business on with, you know, just enough to keep going, but he sent out a message to everyone yesterday that was filled with anger about just everything. How, you know, he mentioned Nancy Pelosi, called her out, made probably, I think, a mistake, particularly in my community, which has a overwhelming political bias. But he called out Nancy Pelosi for not coming to terms and on PPP. He called out, you know, the capricious whim of the state and the Chicago mayor and making decisions and not thinking about the lives and impacts it has on so many people. He is, you know, he's a great employer that made a decision a long time ago that he was going to hire predominantly at-risk people. And my son's very fortunate to be able to work with that group of people and be an exception to that rule. But of course, he informed him that, you know, not being at risk in terms of, you know, income and other things, that he was less likely to see reduced hours with outside venues being closed, etc. But he still sent a letter to everybody expressing his anger. You could see a man basically seeing his life being pulled away, his income being pulled away, and speaking on behalf of all those others who depend on that job for income. So I still don't understand. I know that there's a theory here, but when this is a disease that only impacts and only kills people for the most part who are sick, just like you can say cars only kill people who are driving dangerously or driving drunk, it's not a 100% rule, but it's for the most part true. The things that we're doing here are just beyond the pale. I mean, you know, suicides, drug abuse, all those numbers, we're going to look back at this and say we were just so foolish. And you're going to see the political roots in this too. You know, so many people are just waiting to get through the election before they reevaluate how they approach their politics. And I'm tired to hear about cases. Of course cases are going up, you know, but hospitalizations and deaths are what really matters. So, you know, I don't know how this all fits into the election. I think the election is, you know, results are pretty much preordained. You know, I don't see the numbers out there that would allow a Trump victory, although, you know, I watch those prediction markets extremely carefully. I'm actively trading on them every day, around the hour, 24/7. I woke up this morning to see that Arizona and Philadelphia, both prerequisite states for any kind of Trump victory, have moved down. They're still in the low 60s, which means they're still leaning blue. But they appear to be blue, and he can't win without Pennsylvania. Florida is now decidedly a red state. There's very little doubt, except in the polls, but in the prediction markets, Florida looks to be decidedly a red state in this election. But, you know, this looks like Biden's economy to inherit and figure out what to do about all these people now who aren't working. You know,
you look at something and, This is the traitor in me, Jeff. You can't. What was even the one guy on the bozo that was on NCIS for a while, DiNozzo? He said, "I find out if I do what I always did, I get what I always got." And I don't understand if we had 300 million mountaintops that we could send everybody up by themselves to isolate for 14 days with a little sack of food and water and hopefully some toilet paper, and all come back down in 14 weeks with the intention that the virus would be gone. I guess that would be a strategy and might actually be a good one. Operative word there being if. But this has become so contrived. And so I listened to a lady in Napertucky worked at this restaurant, and the owner was very politically, shall we say, nice, and she was like, this is such BS. Nobody can come in here, and I look across the street, and people at the Walmart are like butthole to elbow.
Goes, no, that's, you know, yeah, that's just amazing.
She goes, well, yeah, where is the strategy? Where is the idea that somehow or another, and the idea, the whole, and the, because it's totally class kind. I never thought, especially since, I guess I'll go out on a limb here, the people doing it in this state are, that I see doing it are African American, and it is so class conscious. No, the guy, I don't care about the guy delivering my sandwich. I got a thing yesterday. Guess who's exempt? The people cut your lawn. How the hell are they?
Essential workers.
Essential workers. I mean, the essential workers, this is like our politicians have become nobility in the 1200s in Britain. Any serf is an essential worker if he's cleaning out my outhouse.
Yeah, but there's a theme here that underlies this. It's surprising. During periods like this, you just really find out when you talk to family, colleagues, and friends, and coworkers, vendors, business people, people you know, there are distinctly two types of people. There are people that want to be nannied. There are people that want to fear. You know, I listened to the last debate, of course, every minute of it, and everyone's going to have their own interpretation as to who won that debate, but there were clearly two different messages here. You know, one was of optimism, perhaps grounded in stupidity or narcissism, and the other was just defeatism, and, you know, speaking about dark, dark days and selling fear. And, you know, they were both inadequate messages in their whole, but gee, there was certainly a very distinctive different outlook. One is, you know, they're both selling. They're political candidates for president, so they're selling. One's selling fear, one's selling optimism. It's that simple. And people tend to prefer one, but there are a lot of people that prefer, you know, that love that message of fear. You know,
when I was,
state, you're going to take care of me, keep me safe.
When I was, I won't say maturing, because I'm not so sure that happened yet. When I was growing up, I you know, my mom was, I mean, she was brighter than most, but she was still a mom. And I had a spinster aunt who was like almost like a second mom, and she was worse. There was no doubt that if Jeff Joseph caught a cold, it's because his mother didn't tell him to wear a sweater and eat the chicken soup and get home before it started raining, but you did. You know, all of a sudden one day I was like 14, and I read somewhere a study that they took two groups of people and they injected them both with cold germs, kept one warm and dry and the other cold and wet, and every one of them got the cold. So, I mean, it's the idea that somehow if you just listen to Lori, you just listen to Jay, you can beat something that is, I'm going to say, way more contagious than the common cold. The egos there are dramatic. You got it because you didn't do what I told you to do. Are we going to think about that with a cold now and flu and cancer and other things? You got cancer because you're 10 pounds overweight. I'm not paying. But yet skinny people get cancer. Skinny people have high blood pressure. Skinny people die. I mean, is this just yet another step down this road that I get to say whether you did it or if you'd have listened to me, you wouldn't have done it, or you like to have a drink? Oh, God, no wonder you got high blood pressure. Yet people have high blood pressure that don't. Is this just a continuation of whatever society we're turning into?
Last night, late, you know, after the new Supreme Court justice was confirmed, there was an event at the White House, and I flipped on CNN, and I was watching, and I had to take a picture on my phone what the Chyron read. Boy, in fact, I don't have it right in front of me, but it in essence said White House hosting another potential super spreader event.
Yeah.
That was the Chyron with a woman being, you know, sworn into the Supreme Court with a Rose Garden ceremony. Her name's not even mentioned, right? She's standing at the podium. She's speaking. The Chyron reads, White House hosting another potential super spreader event. I'm like, oh, my goodness. If this is not a completely distorted media perception, right? I mean, it was just unbelievable to see that editorialization. You know, they're still in campaign mode, CNN and all the networks, you know, to be fair, but boy, we have a dirty media.
Is it possible in the current environment? First of all, I don't know if you saw in Illinois, but you sounds like you did. We had 6,000 positives. We had 83,000 people get tested.
Yeah, right.
77,000 people got in their car and went in line and got tested and didn't have any symptoms. What are we doing, Jeff? And we got a governor who thinks that the next day, let's say we had 6,000 positives. Everybody's looking at this positivity rate. So the next day,
yeah, if 8%, there's, you got to flip the switch again. Right.
Next day, if there's 2,000 cases, but only 15,000 idiots show up, that's worse. Mm-hmm. I mean the math is insane, right? It's like, if two people broke their leg in football last night, which looked like they did actually, well, one guy at least, and we're going to go test X-ray everybody's leg. The positivity rate's one out of 80, okay. What does that tell you? And why? I mean, if you got a good doctor, the positivity rate should be 100, right?
Right.
The only people getting the test are the people that have it. What do these tests cost, and who pays for them? I don't even have an idea. I don't.
What do you what? Test for?
What do they cost, and who pays for them?
I did see that Costco is going to have them in stock beginning next week.
You know the one lady doing the test. What is how many people? What does it cost? Who pays?
No, they're going to have at-home kits Costco for retail. And the price was somewhere in the 100s. I saw actually a mailer or something like that go around, but
per test, per test,
mm-hmm.
or for like not a group of six or anything, for one.
Yes.
Yee.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like a pregnancy test that turns blue if you got it or what?
I guess so. I don't know. Yee. I don't know. Yeah.
Fortunately, you and I have never had to do the pregnancy test, I don't think.
No, not lately. No.
It's
true.
But I've had guys, I don't know if you've had a chance, I know you've been busy, you've had a chance to listen, but we had John Flanagan on, and we had Jim, our mortgage guy, last week, and these guys are starting to get concerned. I mean, John does, you know, he does a lot of title work and everything, and my mortgage guy says that we're up to nationwide over 7%, over 60 days in arrears on mortgages. He says, normally, if you're over 2%, you get your underwear in a knot. He goes, and we're over 7% and nobody's even talking about it.
Sure.
That's getting, I mean, is there going to be a, we can't come back from this time here if we keep doing the stupidity?
Well, I think the way that's going, the subject I'm looking at quite a bit, is that this is all rolling up. The commercial real estate and the people I've talked to at publicly traded REITs feel as though they're at the top of the food chain, the liability of unpaid mortgage, whether it be housing or commercial rents or office rents, those three categories are all rolling up to the property owners and subsequently the banks, and you know that because the tenants are not paying or just not paying, you know, and they're using PPE or whatever as an excuse, and landlords are being made to, you know, forced to make a decision about what to do, and then invariably they're choosing to do nothing. It's not like they're going to get rid of a tenant and just have an open space. So they're accepting the fate of the business or the homeowner or the renter, I should say. And this is all this liability is kind of rolling up to the top. So this is going to be a banks and a REIT, you know, scenario. And it looks like I would imagine that the individual property owner is going to get stuck more than the publicly traded REIT, and you know where the banks are, or that the developer, you know, that's financing his own buildings, they're in real trouble. You know, developers are going to have a tough time, but that there's going to be some sort of bailout, you know, to banks and REIT owners and other large property owners, because they are not getting it. LB Galoon, who's a long time been the directs the real estate editorial over at Crane Chicago Business, and I was speaking with him this weekend, and this is what he's noted. He's been writing on it on a regular basis, and he thinks it's just going to get worse and worse.
Well, when do you, I don't want to go into a long dissertation here, but the amount of credit that's offered people in the building industry, it could be anywhere. It could be the electrical supply store. It could be the hardware store. There could be credit all over the place, right?
Sure.
But I guess with a bank, if it's Maddie Weber Midwest Bank, when do you and I know that Maddie Weber's bank's got a problem? Is it the first day he increases his loan reserve, or can we find out before?
Well, increasing the loan reserve would be, that's going to be too late. I mean, you don't know. But I don't think that's where the risk, though, to the economy is. I don't think, we have enough predicate examples to know that the Fed would likely, or the state would likely bail out these banks. I wouldn't expect that the banks are going to take the heat here.
But we're reaching the end of the chain here. I mean, how does Illinois bail out anybody?
That's true. They don't.
You'll read stuff. I get, missives all the time where, Joe Jamoke is predicting Armageddon. And, we always seem to dodge Armageddon, so I'm not going to be one of those guys. Yet, I'm looking at some of these numbers yet. I guess maybe I'm turning into one of these guys. I look at this year we're talking about, we're 2.5 times, the deficit is 2.5 times the amount of the tax receipts on the federal level for income taxes.
Sure.
And if we have another stimulus package by the end of the year, we're going to push that to 3.5.
Yep.
Well, that's, and yet we've got a mayor and a governor who are absolutely convinced that the solution is to tax people out of this. How the hell are you gonna increase the property taxes? Plus, at least it was refreshing on Saturday to listen to News Radio 78 say that Lori wants to give people for tickets 6 miles over the limit because she needs the revenue. At least she was honest enough to say that's the only reason why. Why not just, what's the difference? Just send everybody a ticket,
Really?
I mean, what are we doing?
By the way, I watch, because of the podcast that we have called the Political Trade, which is about trading political futures, but they're focused on the election. Do you have a feel? I don't. Have you seen any polling on the fair tax in Illinois? I have not seen anything that seems to be.
Well, let's pull that one up after the break.
Is that likely to pass or not?
Let's pull that one up after the break. SP Futures up 12, because that's an interesting one, because I want to think about it during the break. NASDAQ Futures up 46. Short answer is, I don't know. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments.
You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. It's Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Jeff Joseph. SPP is up 11, so we've come back down a little bit. We were up like 16 when we came in. So still positive. Still trying to bounce back from yesterday. NASDAQ futures up 50. Dow futures up 66. Over in Europe, these guys aren't coming back at all. DAX down 28.2%. FTSE down 3. Call that flat. CAC around down 35.7. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 8. Call that flat. Shanghai up 3. Call that flat. Hang Seng over down 131. It's 0.5%. The only one doing anything over there. Yesterday is a review. Yikes. Dow down 650. S&P down 64. NASDAQ down 189. The Dow was down the most. Every stock in the Dow yesterday was pretty buried at one point. Bonds, 0.79 in a 10-year. The Bund minus 0.58. Japan positive 0.03. Sorry. Maybe someday 0.3, but I don't know whose lifetime that'll be. Oil up 22 cents, 38.78, so still way below 40. Brent up 20 cents, 40.66. Natural gas unchanged at 302. RBOB pretty much unchanged at 112, so not much going on in the energy markets either. Gold down a whole buck and a half, 19.04. Silver up 7 cents, 24.49. Copper up a penny at 310, not much going on in the metals markets either. Matty, we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We had an earlier crash on the outbound Eisenhower just before Des Plaines Avenue. That's been cleared now, but some resulting congestion from that. The old post office to Wolf Road is up to 33 minutes. To Route 390, 45 minutes on the outbound Ike. Inbound side looking okay. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Stevenson's been quiet all morning. Southside Expressway is still looking good as well. Same for Lakeshore Drive. So it's been a relatively quiet commute so far on Tuesday, with the exception of the outbound Eisenhower if you're heading out to the western suburbs. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds early, cold temperatures again. Then we could see some sunshine later on this afternoon, but we'll reach a high of just 43. Fear not, we'll warm up later on this week, and we'll be in the 50s over the weekend, so that won't be too bad. But another cold one today, a high of 43. Right now it's overcast and 35 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, it's cold down there, too. Partly cloudy skies with a high of just 69, well below normal. Right now it's clear and 52. In sports, Monday Night Football last night, and the Bears laid an egg. They were blown out. Well, the score was does not fully reflect the, if you actually watch the game. They lost 24-10, but the offense could never get anything going. In fact, the Bears' only touchdown was a defensive touchdown scored by Eddie Jackson late in the fourth quarter when the game was already out of reach. Bears lose 24-10, drop to 5-2. They're still second place in the NFC North and firmly in the playoff race, but a tough loss last night to the Rams.
Lastly, the World Series continues tonight, and the Dodgers will have a chance to close out Tampa Bay Game 6 tonight with L.A. leading 3-2. It'll be Snell versus Gonsolin on the mound, and that's a 7:08 Chicago time first pitch. Chief.
The the Bears, you got me thinking about the Bears again. Out of the last 20 times they were in Monday Night TV, how many were clunkers? Didn't we go back in the 80s before they had the good team? Weren't they years they weren't on Monday Night Football? They were like the Bills.
They've definitely had a stretch back when they were really bad in the 90s specifically, where they weren't on national TV very much. Now, they've been pretty competitive. 2 years ago they were in the playoffs. This year they're off to a good start. You know, they obviously went to the Super Bowl back in 06, and they've had some decent teams between then and now. Plus, they draw a huge TV rating, obviously, with the Chicago market. So they want them to be on national TV if they're decent. And so they're putting them on there.
But people are watching the TV, but they're asleep.
It was ugly last night. Neither offense is very good. And both have very good defenses. And so, 2 years ago, the Bears beat the crap out of the Rams up here in the cold weather. Last year, I was at the game in L.A., and it was the same type of game. The Rams killed us, but it was just an ugly, boring game. And last night, down in L.A., same thing. An ugly, boring game, and their defense was better than our defense. Neither offense is any good.
Jeff, in regards to your question, I'm going to have to kind of give you a little bit of a long story here. I, for one, I'm totally against it, as you can imagine. How many years ago did we vote on whether to have another constitutional convention? And I thought, boy, it's probably time in the state to have one, right? Well, it got voted down dramatically because every union was convinced and everybody who was getting a pension was convinced the only reason to have one was to get rid of that pension clause.
Rewrite the pension.
So I'm going to say that there are an awful lot of people getting a check or soon to be getting a check. Not saying, people write their own ballot, right? I mean, it's not like people will vote their own best interest. I'm going to say that they're going to start with, Maddie, help me here. You're more of a vote numbers guy. I'm going to say they're going to start with 400,000 votes to the yes side from people who either are on pensions, people are going to get pensions, or people somehow think that rich people should just plain pay more. So, as to whether or not the other side can overcome that, for a constitutional convention to fix up the pension thing, because clearly that's what's killing us, and we can't even get the fraud out of it at this point. You know, when I was mentioned yesterday, I don't know if you were listening, but there's years, pick 2012. You could retire then, and the highest paid person and anything you did was say $100,000. Which means the highest pension should be 85. There's probably 100 people that are doing way over 85. So at least you should cut them back to 85 and say, look, if you want to go to a hearing and tell us how you game the system and how you deserve it, feel free, but make it good, Sue us. We can't even do stuff like that. So I would say that there's a traditional amount, plus Maddie and I had the fortune of having the guy who's the head of the Chicago Teachers Pension Union on the show, and he basically said, no matter what happens, we have our promises, we have our deal, and it's up for the rest of you schmoes to essentially come up with it. So that attitude is purveying, and those people are going to be at the polls. Now the question is, can the rest of the people overcome that 325,000 vote head start? I'm going to say I doubt it, but I hope so. How's that for a long-winded response?
Yeah, I have not seen polling on it. But it's a tough state. It's a blue state. I think, I think it's likely to pass.
Well, the dude with the shorts in the Republican versus Democrat commercial that both won it. First of all, he's not a Republican. He's some union guy that somehow managed to jump on something, and he ends up getting a state pension for being a union rep for a state union or something. I mean, what the hell is that all about?
Yeah.
But these little games, they got to go, Jeff. They got to go.
Oh yeah, they're terrible. They're happening in North Carolina too. In that race, who's that? North Carolina. I think that's Jamie Harrison. Oh, and Lindsey Graham. That's South Carolina. In South Carolina, it's happening in the Jamie Harrison Lindsey Graham race. where the Democrat, Jamie Harrison, who has raised over $100 million, all outside money, the Democrat, you know, trying to defeat Lindsey Graham, the DNC has contributed over $100 million. The most expensive Senate race in history for any state is in North Carolina. And that's because, obviously, they want to unseat Lindsey Graham. And one of the tactics they're using, which everybody knows, is that there was a third candidate who's a far kind of right-wing Republican candidate, but he was running as an independent, and his has a real far right-wing appeal. So the Democrats are paying, running ads for him to try to split the Lindsey Graham vote, even though the guy has resigned from the race a couple of weeks ago. And he has resigned his candidacy. Democrats are running ads for this guy. His name is Bill Bledsoe, even though he doesn't exist, just to try to split the vote. That's how dirty that campaign is.
Is he still on the ballot?
Huh?
Is he still on the
ballot? He is on the ballot, but he already said, I'm no longer running, but the ballots were already printed.
Mr. Weber is a gentleman who knows all about radio and the real bowels of radio when it comes to politics. I know when we were on the Score or we were on some of the other stations, we always used to get this missive about times of the year where you can't have a politician on because if you have somebody on, you have to, not only you, but if he was on, say we were on, you know, W whatever, at 6 in the morning and we had somebody on for a half hour, his opponent gets to come on and he might be able to pile into somebody else's show. It's a station thing. So the station is really not happy with, like, you having a political guest. But my point is, but there's also, you have to send in to the, is it the state, Manny? You have to send in to the state your lowest advertising rate that you've given anybody an advertisement for the last, I don't know if it's a year, 2 years, whatever. That's why I need Manny on this. And then that's your political rate. So if we give, Joe's Bar and Grill, because I like the grill, an advertisement on Stocks and Jacks, if we were on radio, for $20, that's our political rate. So you got to be careful that you don't, you know, when you send into the state, you're going to say nobody gets on here for less than $100 or something like that.
Yeah.
Even though
as how they're the only people that have any money this time of year.
Well, that's why when you went, well, I'll use it because he's no longer there. That's why when you came on Mike North, if you wanted a commercial on Mike North, They wanted $250. And the guys go, that's too expensive. Okay, well, we'll give you one on Mike North, we'll give you one on Stocks and Jacks. And people go, okay. But still, the list price was $250, and then the other was a throw-in. When in fact, the person figured he was paying $150 for Mike and $100 for us. Right? So, there's all these little games you play, but, I'm stunned that a station would take an ad for somebody who already quit.
Most of them are online ads. You can pull it up right now, Bill Bledsoe. Most of them are online ads, but they are aggressively promoting a candidate who has quit.
So we're not talking.
And if you look at it, it'll say paid for by the Democratic Party. I saw it yesterday. I looked at the actual ad online, or the ad that runs on television, paid for by the. Who is Bill Bledsoe? He believes in this. He believes in this. And they're trying to. It's there's a subtlety, and it's things that, you know, he believes in Trump. He believes in the. So it's a real clever, very manipulative, very deceptive, disingenuous ad campaign that Democrats are paying for to promote. You know, trying to do anything they can in North Carolina. It's not gonna succeed. That's gonna be $100 million thrown out the window. Lindsey Graham will prevail in that state. That's what they're trying to do with extra money.
Jeff, if they threw it to Stacks and Jacks, it wouldn't be.
So, speaking of propositions, another one worth noting is it looks like the Proposition 22 in California, the one that will convert Uber and Lyft drivers to employees to have the benefits of employees, that looks to be neck and neck. That is a nail biter, that particular proposition. Of course, that would, you know, essentially destroy ride-sharing services, Uber and Lyft, because they can't afford to pay drivers as employees. But that is very, very close, and that could go either way in California.
Well, they didn't want to, the way the cabbies did it, and it was, somewhat clean, if you think the cab business was ever clean, is there was a medallion, there was a license, all right? And then if you own the license, and maybe even own the cab, I would rent the license from you for the day on a daily basis or weekly basis or monthly, and I would have, you know, chief cab company. So there was never any doubt that I was my own guy, right? But now if I just, you know, then, but they decided they ran roughshod over the license and basically buried the license and said, we don't need no snicking license. So sometime you, is what they used to say, you reap what you sow.
That's right. Yeah, that's the offshoot of it. That's a good point. The license has created a different structure for that.
So if I decide, Audrey actually did this. This is wild. Because well, she doesn't want to be driving around at night taking a lift people around, but she's like, hey, how many times do I, am I out in, you know, Elgin or someplace showing a house at 9 in the morning and I'm driving all the way back to Orland at, you know, 10 o'clock? Why don't I become a, you know, see if I want to be a Lyft driver? So she goes, there's a full training thing. They treat you somewhat like an employee. There's training, there's things you have to do. And she says, they're actually very nice. I think she picked up maybe two people. But both people were old grandmas going from, like, Elgin to Orland to visit their daughter. And she said, I got to ride with this nice old lady. I think she had two rides. But it wasn't a bad deal. And she, you know, she picked up essentially company coming back from someplace to someplace. I mean, she never actually went out and did it, but learned a lot about it. Actually thought Lyft was a way better deal than how they treat people than Uber. She wasn't even close. I mean, that's, I don't know if it's just here or what, but anyway, so that's where that all is. But I'm surprised. Why would that be in a referendum? Jeff, wouldn't you just think that would be a law? And they'd ban one side or the other?
Referendum. Boy, that's a good question.
It
mandates the treatment of ride-sharing workers as employees. That's what the actual mandate is. Well, I guess it has to be because you're just changing the laws by which corporations are doing business.
I will. You know what I'm going to do for you, Jeff, because I know you got me curious. I'm going to ask Lou on Thursday because he's the expert. Because there's a whole list of. I don't think Uber can demand that you're there at a certain time. Right, so that's
you can do it. Yeah,
you can't do that for anyone who's a independent contractor. You cannot require a certain time, but they don't. You know, that's the part of the structure is you sign on whenever you choose to.
To me, that's
and they really let the market decide. You know, most of the people who ride or drive, I should say, they'll look at the app, they'll see if it's high period or down period, they'll see what the average price is for a ride, and they make their own decision. So it's very market-driven, and they don't need to say, okay, here's your shift, you're on at 9 o'clock. You know, there are people are, it's a supply-demand economic curve that people are responding to as drivers that, oh, there's a lot of demand out there, I need to get outside, you know. There's a brilliance to that.
This goes with my theme lately about, I'll confide in you, Jeff, because you're my counselor, right? There's issues with democracy, all right, in some ways. I mean, you know, I say it too often. It can't be, you know, four wolves and one hen voting on who to have for breakfast. I mean, because I guess that's democracy, but it's not so good for the hen, right? You elect people to make rules, and you can throw them out. I mean, that's what we're doing here. And there should be rules that have been in place in California for 50 years regarding who's an employee and who isn't, and maybe they need to be changed, maybe they need to be amended. As to why something like that would ever go to a public, I'll use the term plebiscite, why? I mean, where am I wrong here?
Not sure. But, you know, I don't have an answer. But that brings up, to me, that brings up Illinois and, well, third parties. In fact, Matt, any chance you listen to Kanye on Joe Rogan?
I have not listened to it. I saw some headlines on it, though.
Yeah, I can't say it was really inspiring because, you know, it's Kanye, and he, as much as he's interesting to listen to, and of course Kanye West was on Joe Rogan's podcast over the weekend. It's kind of a 3-hour talk fest, right? And Rogan gave him the run of the place. He is all over the place. You do see some strains of brilliance in Kanye. he is a deep thinker. You know, he's obviously out of his mind, but there is some flashes of genius there as well. He's clearly a musical genius. You know, there's no question about that. But I think his whole presidential candidacy has been so interesting, being on the ballot in 11 states. And he actually spoke to that somewhat. I don't think he made a very compelling case for his presidency, but I sure love the fact that he's actually on the ballot. But I did have the opportunity to speak with Joe Jorgensen, who's the Libertarian candidate for president, Libertarian Party, first female candidate ever from the Libertarian Party for president. And I spoke with her for an hour, which was an interview that, you know, we dropped on the Political Trade podcast last week. And, you know, I'm a fan of third parties. Living in Illinois for the last 30 years and voting in 6 presidential elections in this state, I've voted for third-party candidates more than I've voted for Democrats or Republicans, and I have indeed voted for all of them during that period of time. But I would say this, in a state like Illinois, which is dark blue or dark red, and this is something I spoke about with her during the podcast, if you live in a dark blue state like Illinois or a dark red state like Montana, why are you voting for a Democrat or a Republican? I mean, why are you even wasting your time? Talk about a wasted vote. And we got onto the subject because the notion that a third-party vote is wasted, where the fact of the matter is it's to the contrary. You live in Illinois. You know what's going to happen here. It's going to be a blue state. The state is going to Biden. The Electoral College votes in this state are going into Biden. There's nothing that's going to change that. So unless you really feel that this ticket, these two options served up the best and brightest from the Republican and Democratic Party, unless you really feel that, you have to vote third party. You have to express your displeasure with the candidates, your displeasure with the system. 47% of people voting are not voting for their candidate anyways. They are voting against another candidate. They either see Trump as a race-baiting narcissist, you know, who at every given opportunity decides to make a decision that divides people rather than unite them, and many people are right for looking at him that way, or they see Biden as a, you know, senile 47-year-old swamp puppet who's every political decision he's ever made has been wrong for the most part and had huge implications. He's got written off for dead, if not resurrected in the 11th hour by his party. And there's reasons not to like either one of these candidates, so you vote against them and vote for another guy that you don't like. I just don't get the reasoning why third party. I think it's aggravating that, you know, the third parties 4 years ago totaled 5% of the vote, and I'm not advocating for a libertarian vote by any means, but just third parties in general. And they need to be at 15% to be on the debate stage. And why we continue to funnel this, feed this system that just gives us these two candidates, the two oldest men running for president in history, one of them is going to be elected, with a 5 to 30% chance that he won't even serve out a full term because of age next year. That is the reality of what we're looking at. We're like lemmings going to walk to the polls and in Illinois and pull a blue ballot, or walk to the polls in Arkansas and pull a red ballot, when you can actually not waste your voice and send a message. I just think, you know, like Jefferson said, we get the government we deserve. We moan all the time about our political system.
Jeff, we have one more party than Russia. What more do you want?
And then we complain, you know. So there's my rant.
Jeff,
there's a reason to consider, in a dark red or dark blue state, a third-party candidate, even if he's batshit crazy like Kanye West.
The contributors on this show, a lot of them, are not only voting for Jorgensen as a protest, but are actually, you know, very impressed by her. I actually saw that you guys had her on, and it's in my queue to listen to. In fact, I'm going to listen to that today because I know you guys covered an array of things. What were your impressions on her?
I think she's a good spokesman for the Libertarian Party. I think she certainly believes and feels, and shares all libertarian values. From that perspective, you know, the idea of ending foreign wars, eliminating, you know, freeing everybody on day one that's been involved in a victimless crime like, you know, drugs and prostitution and gambling. She believes in a healthcare safety net, which is really, really interesting. It's kind of a little take on, you know, a little twist on what you'll typically hear from a libertarian. And she believes ultimately a free market system will better healthcare, a true free market system, which she compellingly makes the case that we don't have, but she believes you can't get there without a safety net in healthcare, which is really refreshing to hear. Overall, she understands the policies and the platform of the party, you know, perfectly and ascribes to it without any variation. She's just not a forceful candidate. She's a good person, but, you know, so she doesn't have the strength of the ticket 4 years ago that Bill Weld and Gary Johnson had, both former governors, you know, and that's why libertarians saw 3.2% of the popular vote, and coupled in with the Green Party, you were up over 5% on third-party votes in 2016. That's not going to happen this year, and boy, that's a shame. You know, that means we're voting less on third-party candidates. Two guys, somehow our decision is we're going to vote more for those two guys than we did 4 years ago.
Why do you?
Amazing to me.
Why do you suppose that is? I mean, we continue with the question for a second.
It's this tribal thing. It's, you know, I mean, you know, people are crazy. I really don't understand the dark red, dark blue, go with the flow thing. I just don't get it. What do you think you're accomplishing?
All right, so
you live in Illinois and you hate Trump.
We're gonna have to talk
about. I'm not
gonna
say you like Biden because that emotion doesn't exist anywhere.
No.
Nobody loves Biden.
We have to.
I love this man. I love this.
We got to talk.
Oldest man in history about to be president. I just love this guy.
We got to talk
next
week.
You don't hear that.
Let's say
you hate Trump and you have good reason to believe that, and many people do have good reason to feel that way. You still going to vote for Biden when you know he's going to win the state, and you could do something to change the system and send a message going forward? I just don't. It's that tribal thing. I think it goes back to those 50% of people who just love being told what to do. You know,
I know we have to wrap it up, but I just have to ask you, 1 week out, I mean, the polls I'm looking at say Biden's going to win in a landslide. I still don't believe it. What do you think? 30 seconds.
I believe he's going to win. I don't believe it's going to be a landslide. He's definitely not going to win Florida, and Arizona might end up in play. Iowa and Ohio are going to be red as well. It's not going to be the landslide that people think, and I think it's questionable now if he flips the Senate. I think some of these races like Peters, you know, in Michigan are tighter than we're looking at. I think McSally in Arizona, that race is done. But it's going to be closer, but Biden prevails. That's what I would expect.
Why don't we get the people from the Republicans, like around 60 Minutes a few weeks ago, that to me, they sound like me, a malcontent Democrat. Why don't all those people jump one of these third parties and actually be a real party 4 years from now?
You know, the third parties, they're mindless. You know, let's go back to Matt's question, which he didn't ask, but how come it took 4 years for the Libertarian Party, after having two governors on your ticket, to come up with a psychology professor from Clemson? Joe Jorgensen is. Nice enough woman, but, you know, doesn't really have the political chops or experience to be competitive, doesn't have a constituency. So it takes you 4 years to come up with that candidate?
Jeff Joseph, you know, at 24.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense. They got to get their act together, too.
All right, Joe, we got
to
dash.
But it's money, and it's a system that is built and designed to keep them off ballots.
Right, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Stocks and Jacks, we'll be back tomorrow. SP Futures not only up 3. Jeff, hopefully we'll go over this next Tuesday on Election Day, for God's sake. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456.
Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.